You know, old lies die hard. Today, we're going to take a good, hard look at some of the historic lies told about the Jewish people. They are alive and well today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it's Thursday, which means it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And we're going to focus on something very interesting, very disturbing, but on another level, something very faith-building. We're going to focus on some of the historic lies that have been told about the Jewish people that are still prevalent today. And we're going to focus in particular on the refugee problem in the Middle East, the Arab/Palestinian refugee problem. I was having lunch with some brothers talking about some of these issues a couple of days ago. I've done broadcasts on similar subjects before. Thursdays, we often focus on Israel and the Middle East along with larger Jewish questions. So I thought, let's do it. Yeah, I know Christmas is coming in a couple of days, but so what? We can't do a serious show about Israel? Good. Now, if you have any kind of Jewish-related question, we always try to open the phones for that on Thursdays. So the number to call remains 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. Now, I want to put a question to you. If you dispute that Jews today are really Jews, if you dispute that the Jewish people have a right to the land of Israel, if you do not believe that the modern state of Israel has anything to do with biblical prophecy, I invite you to join me today and present your views, and we can have respectful differences. If you want to call and be really hostile, that's okay. Just makes your point sound worse, and we can't let you talk as much if you don't dialogue. But by all means, I welcome you to call in and differ with me today, as well as raise your Jewish questions, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to read a quote in a couple of minutes to you that might surprise you. One of our beloved generals, one of our famous leaders from World War II, had an ugly anti-Semitic strain as well. We're going to read a couple of quotes to him, from him to you. 866-34-TRUTH. I've written, by God's grace now, 20 books and some things that would be considered books that don't count in the overall number, but 20 basic books published. And the one that has been translated into more languages than any book I've written, and the one that was written with the most tears and pain, and the one that has been continuously in print, just about the longest, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People. The book came out in 1992 with a foreword by Pastor Don Wilkerson of Teen Challenge, who was then with Times Square Church. And I felt compelled to write this book so that the church could feel the pain of the Jewish people. I felt compelled to write it. I felt moved to write it. I felt stirred to write it, so that the church could feel the historic pain of the Jewish people. Now, there are plenty of Jews who are listening or who have read my material that have no sympathy for it because they reject me because I say that Jesus is our Messiah and they need to believe in Jesus. There are other Jews who welcome what I've written. And in fact, a rabbi of the synagogue where I was bar mitzvahed, he became rabbi after I was bar mitzvahed, wrote an endorsement for this book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. And he said, though strongly disagreeing with the book theologically, I was deeply moved as I read it. I pray that Dr. Brown's message penetrate the souls of Christians everywhere. If his words are absorbed like showers on young grass, like droplets on the grass, Deuteronomy 32, glory will indeed be given to God. And I have chapters in this book dealing with lies, lies, lies. We'll take it up when we come back.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are talking about some of the historic and contemporary lies that have been told about the Jewish people and exposing them, talking them through. I have no problem saying when we as Jews do things wrong or have wrong attitudes, actions, words, no problem criticizing it, no problem taking issue with the Israeli government. And yet I believe that the reason there is world hostility to Israel is because of anti-Semitism. The reason that crazy things are still believed about Jewish people to this day, crazy, insane things, is because of demonic Jew hatred. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Chapter 7 of my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, which we're offering the special price through the day, we'll tell you about that later. It's called Lies, Lies, Lies. Many strange tales have been told about the Jewish people, but none is stranger than the tale of the wandering Jew. According to the legend, as Jesus was on his way to be crucified, a Jewish man either struck or rebuffed the Son of God as a result of his irreverence. The Lord condemned him to wander the earth until the second coming. All right, stupid myth, make-believe story. Nobody believes it. No, people believe it. Is the myth of the wandering Jew. Countless thousands of people, especially in medieval Europe, actually believed the story. On numerous occasions, people reported meeting the wandering Jew in person. He was allegedly seen in 1223 by some pilgrims passing through Armenia. He supposedly made an appearance at a church in Germany in 1542, and according to local traditions, he was also sighted in Lübeck, 1603, Paris, 1604, Brussels, 1640, Leipzig, 1642, Munich, 1721, and London, 1818. The different names by which he has been known include Ahasverus, Cartaphilus, Butadius, Butadu, Votadio, Juan Espera and Dios, to name just a few. The anti-Semitic imagination is quite creative. A famous German book written about this wandering Jew based on his supposed church visit in 1542 was translated or paraphrased into French, Danish, Estonian, and Italian. Why all this interest in such an absurd story? It's quite simple. It personified the church's viewpoint of the Jewish people as a whole. They were guilty as a nation of the crucifixion of Jesus. Therefore, they must continuously wander around the earth, destitute, homeless, persecuted, and always suffering, as a constant witness to the truth of the gospel message. The Jews are cursed. The Christians are blessed. That proves that Christianity is right. I mean, that's what gives further credence to this lie. Have you heard the famous Hitler quote? The great masses of the people more easily fall victim to a big lie than to a little one. Before I go to your calls, before I read a very disturbing letter regarding General George Patton, let me read that letter. Let me read that George Patton letter, the letter concerning him. This was written by Dr. Raphael Madoff, director of the David S. Wyman Institute for Holocaust Studies, Melrose Park, Pennsylvania. Online, you could find it under Letters They Wouldn't Publish. This was a letter to the editor of the Weekly Standard, August 14, 2005. Dear editor, Jonathan F. Kyler asserts that, quote, there is no evidence that General George S. Patton's anti-Semitism, even if it exceeded the usual country club variety, affected his conduct during the war. Professor Joseph Bendersky, in his study of anti-Semitism in the American military, described two important instances in which Patton, motivated by anti-Semitism, influenced U.S. policy toward Jews. Following the Allied liberation of North Africa in November 1942, Patton, warning of a Jewish conspiracy to, quote, take over Morocco and the need to appease Arab public opinion, persuaded General Eisenhower to oppose abolishing the anti-Jewish legislation that the Vichy regime had imposed in the region, or even releasing local Jews who were being held in forced labor camps. Eisenhower's recommendations, in turn, were endorsed by Secretary of War Henry Stimson and soon, quote, set the tone for future American wartime policies on the entire Middle East. Okay, how about this? After the war, Bandersky writes, it was Patton who, quote, set the tone for Army policies and behavior toward the Holocaust, who were languishing in displaced person camps in the American zone of occupation. Just so you understand this, after the liberation of the concentration camps, there were thousands of Jews who were still in camps. They had nowhere to go. All family was killed. Their communities had been ravaged. And there were thousands still living behind barbed wire. And some said that our treatment of them was no different than the Nazi treatment, except we weren't exterminated. According to Professor Joseph Bandersky, it was Patton who, quote, set the tone for Army policies and behavior toward the Holocaust survivors who were languishing in displaced persons, that's DP camps in the American zone of occupation. Patton despised the Jewish DPs, denouncing them as, quote, animals and, quote, a subhuman species without any of the cultural or social refinements of our time. Such attitudes inevitably filtered down to the officers and soldiers in charge of the camps. The treatment of the DPs, displaced persons, was so poor that presidential envoy Earl Harrison, after touring the camps in 1945, reported that, quote, we appear to be treating the Jews as the Nazis treated them, except that we do not exterminate them. When President Truman ordered Eisenhower to improve treatment of the DPs, a furious Patton wrote in his diary, quote, Harrison and his ilk believe that the displaced person is a human being, which he is not. And this applies particularly to the Jews, who are lower than animals. I'm sure General Patton did a lot of good and should be admired and respected for that good, but he obviously had an ugly spot in his heart towards the Jews, and that ugly spot influenced the way Jews were treated at certain times in World War II. We are going to focus a good part of the next segment on the current refugee problem in the Middle East and ask how we got where we are, the Palestinian problem, how we got where we are. First, some calls, 866-34-TRUTH. Kevin in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to get your input on what they call the Khazarian Jews and what you might know of the history of the Khazarians.
Surely. I deal with that briefly in Our Hands Are Stained with Blood in the chapter on lies, 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 pages 66 to 68. Then I have further references, and there have been some books written about this since. So the basic lie is that today's Jews are not really Jews. They're actually Europeans who converted to Judaism. And then specifically, it focuses in on the question of the Khazars in the 8th century, claiming that most European Jews can be traced back to them. So here's what we do know in the kingdom of Khazar, that there was a relatively large-scale conversion of the Khazarians into Judaism, and like a Ruth, they became embraced among the people. This is a tiny, tiny percentage of the overall Jewish population, and whatever roots they once had were assimilated into the overall Jewish population. And for many, the conversion to Judaism was not perfect, not complete. So ultimately, only a small number of them actually trickled into the general European Jewish community. And in fact, most of the real conversions were limited to the royal family. And by the 14th century, these Khazar converts had practically disappeared. And then some of those who converted to Judaism later converted to Christianity or Islam. So that's the reality of it. It's a myth to say that any substantial number of Jews today trace their origin back to the Khazar. It's a complete myth.
I appreciate your input, sir.
You got it. Thank you, Kevin. 866-34-TRUTH. Paul in East Islip, Long Island, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing today, sir?
Fine, thanks.
I'm not sure if it's contradictory to the questions that are being asked today, but I had a question about the menorah. I thought that it originated from the Old Testament, the golden candlesticks. Seven.
Yep.
I see some places use nine.
Yeah, that's not a menorah, although it's commonly called that. The menorah does go back to the temple, the seven candlesticks. That's called a Chanukiah.
Okay.
So it is a variation on the menorah, but with more room for more candlesticks, and that is used in the celebration of Hanukkah. So I actually grew up thinking it was called the menorah until an Israeli friend corrected me years ago. So what we have in our homes is actually a Chanukiah, and that has the additional places for the candlesticks. The menorah goes back to the candlesticks or the lamps in the temple, and that is seven. So you're right on that. Hopefully we clarify that for others as well. All right, we're going to come back, talk about some lies with regard to Israel today. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
One of the greatest controversies of this current generation is the plight of the Palestinians. First, there can be debate about whether there is such a thing as an historic Palestinian people. I say the answer is no. But certainly there are Arabs, hundreds of thousands of Arabs, living in what we call Palestine when the modern state of Israel was birthed and recognized. Certainly there were some thousands of them who had been there many, many, many generations, even hundreds of years, though that was absolutely not the bulk of them. And certainly there needs to be real compassionate consideration to the needs of everyone, every people, every group in the Middle East. Certainly. However, if we give place to lies, we will never get to a place of justice. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 2 days before Christmas Eve, 3 days before Christmas, just for those who are keeping track. We're focusing on some of the historic lies told about the Jewish people. Again, I am a Jewish follower of Jesus, and I call on my Jewish people all the time to turn to Jesus, to recognize him as Messiah. So in that sense, I am in constant conflict and controversy with my Jewish people. In fact, there's a lengthy debate going on right now on the Line of Fire about whether you can believe that Jesus is the Word made flesh and in that sense divine without committing idolatry. Of course, the answer is, of course you can. But we're having debate with other rabbis on the Line of Fire website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. By all means, get involved there. But lies are lies. Lies are lies. Again, the number to call with your Jewish-related questions today, 866-34-TRUTH. A few years ago, a counter-missionary, whom I had debated in the 80s, recommended a book. We were interacting about other issues in a very cordial way. He was studying at Columbia University. And he recommended a book to me that I had not read, Samuel Katz, Battleground, Fact and Fantasy in Palestine. It came out when the first time, 1973, and updated, revised a number of times. The version I have was revised in 2002. And the chapter on Arab refugees is quite extraordinary. Quite extraordinary. And Katz says this: only a George Orwell or Franz Kafka could have done justice to the story of the Arab refugee problem. For 20 years, the world has been indoctrinated with a vision of its origins, its scope, the responsibilities for its solution. So he wrote this some years back. The intent of this picture is roughly that in 1948, the Jewish people launched an attack on the Arab inhabitants of Palestine, drove them out, and thus established the State of Israel. The number of innocent, peace-loving Arabs thus turned refugee was, here you may insert any figure that occurs to you, such as 1 million, 1.5 million, 2 million. Justice demands that the refugees be restored to their homes, and until that day, the world, everyone that is except the Arab people, must care for their upkeep. And Katz devotes a devastating chapter to rebutting that. Here's what he says. He says it's quite fascinating. The fabrication can probably most easily be seen in the simple circumstance that at the time the alleged cruel expulsion of Arabs by Zionists was in progress, it passed unnoticed. Foreign newspaper men who covered the war of 1948 on both sides did indeed write about the flight of the Arabs, but even those most hostile to the Jews saw nothing to suggest that it was not voluntary. In the 3 months during which the major part of the flight took place, April, May, and June 1948, the London Times, at that time openly hostile to Zionism, published 11 leading articles on the situation in Palestine, in addition to extensive news reports and articles. In none was there even a hint of the charge that the Zionists were driving the Arabs from their homes. More interesting still, no Arab spokesman mentioned the subject. At the height of the flight, on April 27th, Jamal Husseini, the Palestine Arabs' chief representative at the United Nations, made a long political statement which was not lacking in hostility toward the Zionists. He did not mention refugees. 3 weeks later, while the flight was still in progress, the Secretary General of the Arab League, Azam Pasha, made a fiercely worded political statement on Palestine. It contained not a word about refugees. More interesting still, the Arab refugees were not driven from Palestine by anyone. The vast majority left, whether of their own free will or at the orders or exhortations of their leaders, always with the same reassurance that their departure would help in the war against Israel. Attacks by Palestinian Arabs on the Jews had begun 2 days after the United Nations adopted its decision of November 29, 1947, to divide Western Palestine into an Arab and a Jewish state. The seven neighboring Arab states, Syria, Lebanon, Transjordan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and Egypt, then prepared to invade the country as soon as the birth of the infant state of Israel was announced. Their victory was certain, they claimed, but it would be speeded and made easier if the local Arab population got out of the way. The refugees would come back in the wake of the victorious Arab armies and not only recover their own property, but also inherit the houses and farms of the vanquished and annihilated Jews. Between December 1, 1947 and May 15, 1948, the clash was largely between bands of local Arabs, aided in diverse ways by the disintegrating British authority and the Jewish fighting organizations. The earliest voluntary refugees were understandably the wealthier Arabs of the towns, who made a comparatively leisurely departure in December 47 and in early 1948. At that stage, departure had not yet been proclaimed as a policy or recognized as a potential propaganda weapon. The Jaffa newspaper, Ash Sha'ab, thus wrote on January 30th, 1948, "The first group of our fifth column consists of those who abandon their houses and businesses and go to live elsewhere. At the first sign of trouble, they take to their heels and escape, sharing the burden of the struggle." The weekly Asari of Jaffa used even more scathing terms on March 30, 1948, to accuse the inhabitants of Sheikh Munis and other villages in the neighborhood of Tel Aviv of bringing down disgrace on us all by abandoning their village. So these are Arabs criticizing other Arabs for fleeing because they were afraid of the conflict, and then it became the official policy. Okay, phone lines are lit up. I want to develop this more on the other side of the break and really throughout the 2 hours of the broadcast. I want to get your calls in the next segment. But please, can I encourage every one of you, if you don't yet have a copy of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, it's the most translated book I've ever written. When it was being translated into Chinese, the translator emailed me and said he's translating it screaming and crying. That's how impacting the book was for him. And it'll also fill you with hope as you get to the end, as you see God's purposes for the Jewish people. You can get the book for $15, postage paid, so that's a good discount on it, and it will change your life as you read it. Call today to order if you'd like to make an extra contribution to help with our Jewish ministry. Wonderful. 1-800-278-9978. Just remember, we come to the end of the year. All of your gifts are tax deductible, and you can order the book. Again, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, just $15, postage paid. Perhaps the most eye-opening book you will read in many years. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, the number is 1-800-278-9978. Those that are leaving us now, see you tomorrow. Everybody else, we got a whole lot more to come. Your calls, we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to The Line of Fire on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday as we get close to the Christmas holiday. So maybe you've got a different schedule. Maybe you're going to be off from work or something like that, and you get to call in Friday and Monday. That's something earth-shattering changes. So tomorrow and Monday, we plan to have special You've Got Questions, We've Got Answer days. I'll be here live, God willing, for both of those days, and we're going to open the phones for all kinds of questions, catch up on some e-questions, Facebook questions. So join us then, 866-34-TRUTH. Before we get back to some of the misconceptions and even lies about the modern refugee problem, it does not diminish the needs of those who identify as Palestinians. What it does is puts a very different picture on the problem. And of course, I deal with it in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. All right, to the phones, Steve in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about the children of Israel or the Jews that left Egypt during the Exodus. Mm-hmm. The Bible says there were 600,000 men. The thing that puzzles me is that if there are three generations between Levi and Moses, and we are told that 70 people went into Egypt during the time of Jacob, during the drought. Is it plausible that three generations would have produced more than a million descendants? I would like an explanation.
Sure. Yeah, well, there are several things. First, it's several hundred years that they're in Egypt. It's not three generations from Levi to Moses. It may mention three names, but the genealogies will commonly skip over names.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. You have several hundred years of captivity in Egypt, or of exile, you could say, in Egypt, then ultimately became captivity. That's the first thing. The second thing is that based on those numbers of 600,000 men plus women and children, that would get you to a number closer to 2 million.
Right.
Now, demographically, is it possible to have that type of growth? It mentions in Exodus 1 how rapid the growth was. Yeah. You could potentially over a period of a couple hundred years do the math and something like that could happen. There are others, however, that look at many of these numbers where it mentions thousands, which is the Hebrew word aleph,
right,
and claim that it actually means not a thousand but tribal leader with a certain amount of people, and that the overall numbers throughout the Old Testament, not by anyone making a mistake, but just by later people misunderstanding what the Hebrew meant, that all the numbers should be greatly reduced, and that would be more in keeping with the demographics we know of the Middle East and Northern Africa at that time. So that's a whole other issue. If you want to get into it in some depth, Steve,
yes,
a book I often recommend by a famous Egyptologist and Old Testament scholar by Kenneth Kitchen, just like Kitchen in your house, Kenneth Kitchen.
Kenneth Kitchen, huh?
Excuse me?
You say Kenneth Kitchen?
Yes, Kitchen. Uh-huh. Just like the kitchen in your house. And it's called On the Reliability of the Old Testament.
Okay.
On the Reliability of the Old Testament. And you'll find in that book, he gets into this in great depth, the question of the numbers and how LF 1000 should be translated. And like some of the numbers, it'll talk about a war and 20,000 people killed or 100,000 people killed. And you think, God, boy, did the numbers sustain that? And it simply may have to do with us misunderstanding some ancient Hebrew scribal customs. So it's a great question, Steve, and you'll find a lot of data in his book on the reliability of the Old Testament, especially about the historical issues and numbers as well. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Brown.
You are very welcome. God bless you. All right. I'm looking at our board here. We've got questions ranging from secular humanistic Judaism to lies about the Holocaust, to the question of the oral law given to Moses, to differences between Ashkenazi and Sephardic Jews. We're going to get to every one of your calls, hopefully right on the other side of the break, and then back to some of the misconceptions and even lies about the current Palestinian crisis. Stay with us.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, my delight to be with you. If you've got a Jewish-related question or want to challenge any of the things I believe about the Jewish people and Israel, number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, ask drbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Can I encourage you to supplement your radio listening experience with all the resources we have on our website? I mean, hundreds of hours of free resources just waiting for you. Surfing the web, why not do something edifying, life-changing? I'm focusing on some of the historic lies told about Israel and the Jewish people. It does not mean that the Jewish people, my own people, have not sinned and done wrong. It does not mean we don't have faults and flaws. It does not mean everything we do in the Middle East is perfect. It means that there are historic lies, demonic lies, baseless lies told about us through the centuries. They get repackaged in different form, but they remain alive and well. I was reading one article raising the question, do we realize that with the rioters and the freedom fighters and others in Egypt, that in every bookstore and every corner that you find, there will be copies of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the famous forged document, fraudulent document from the early 1900s, originally, as we understand, put out by Russian secret police that claims there were Christians hiding in a cemetery who overheard this secret meeting of Jewish leaders and their plot to take over the world. Bestseller. It remains a bestseller in the Muslim world. It remains a bestseller in the Muslim world. There are people in the Muslim Arab world that are sitting in seats in the UN that believe every word of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. It has been made into serial TV shows in the Muslim world and best-selling novels, and the protocols themselves bestsellers. In fact, if you live in New York, for example, and you go in Manhattan and you got guys on the street corner selling books, you'll find it commonly there, let alone, say, in Brooklyn, in heavily Muslim-populated parts of Brooklyn. 866-34-TRUTH. Will in Olney, Maryland. You know, we lived in Olney from 1987 to 1996. Not sure if you knew that, Will.
Oh, that's good. That's good, Mike. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I just I had a few questions. Regarding number one, I think earlier you were asserting that that there are no such thing as European Jews and no such thing as, like, Middle Eastern Jews. Well,
oh, no, no. I didn't say that at all. I said that the idea that the majority of European Jews are converts from the Khazars is a myth. Of course, the European Jews have been scattered all over the earth.
Correct. So obviously, the difference between a Sephardic Jew, let's say, and an Ashkenazi would be that what would the difference be? That's one of the main questions that I
sure
want to get to.
Yeah, Ashkenazic Jews comes from the Hebrew word for Germany, not the only Hebrew word for that, Ashkenaz. It's used to refer to Germany. And Sephardic is from Sfarad, which refers to Spain. So Ashkenazic Jews are Jews basically who have lived in France, Germany, Eastern Europe, and their descendants. And Sephardic Jews are Jews who have lived in Spain, Portugal, North Africa, the Middle East, and their descendants. So it's as they've settled in these different communities over the centuries and then lived there for centuries, they have certain customs that are different. Their pronunciation of Hebrew is different. Otherwise, they're all Jews that ultimately go back to the 12 tribes.
Right. I just want to make a point clear, you know, based on my readings, is the Semitic people are primarily a Middle Eastern people who include the Arabs, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say Semitic and we say Sephardic at the same time, this is a region in which these people dwelled, and having lived in the Middle East for a while, there's a distinct difference in the look of, let's say, a Sephardic Jew who looks more Arab
mm-hmm.
than an Ashkenazi Jew who looks nothing like an Arab. And
yeah,
if we're talking about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. What's interesting, though, is that DNA tests with Ashkenazi Jews do trace them back to the Middle East. It's an interesting thing because the appearances will be different and obviously living in certain places for centuries and centuries, and then if there's any degree of intermarriage with surrounding peoples. But interestingly, the DNA does trace the Ashkenazi back. The thing you're saying about Semitic peoples, absolutely, the Arabs are a Semitic people, the Middle Eastern Jews are a Semitic people, but the term anti-Semitism just means Jew hatred. That's how it was coined, and that's how it's used. Even though, yeah, my PhD is in Semitic languages, so I studied Arabic and Babylonian and Phoenician and along with Hebrew. But yeah, absolutely, there and the within Israel, the Sephardic Jews don't have as high standing in the society often as the Ashkenazi Jews.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting. Though, but while I was online, I mean, this is a kind of away from the original question. I heard, you know, when you were talking about the Palestinian issue. And what's interesting about what you say, and I kind of want to ask you about this, because I think there needs to be a discourse, and hopefully the people who are tuned into your station are educated enough to be informed properly. When you say that the Palestinians were fleeing or leaving, usually when somebody leaves or flees from an area, there's a catalyst. Am I right, Michael?
Yeah, the catalyst was the Arab attack on the Jewish population, and the Arabs saying that a cannon cannot distinguish between a Jew and an Arab, and we can get rid of the Jews much more quickly if you get out of here. That was the catalyst, and it's very, very well documented. And the Jews put out pamphlets. Mayors of cities made appeals. Stay. You're not our enemies. Stay. That's why there are 1.5 million Arab Israelis in the land today. Those are the ones, basically, who stayed. And, of course, they grew in numbers, but those are the ones who stayed.
See, I do respect. I respect the way that you defend your race or your religion. But sometimes I think you step outside the bounds. I think for you to inform people that a whole group, a whole nation of people, at one point decided to get. See, this is the picture you paint. That what happens is there were Jews, and then the Palestinians attacked the Jews, and then
No, the Palestinians primarily didn't attack. The surrounding Arab, but the surrounding Arab nations did. We know that. Seven nations attacked. I mean, everybody knows that. Nobody argues that. But here's what troubles me.
Okay.
I'm recounting history and facts, and you say I'm defending my race. That's a very disturbing comment. It would be as if someone is talking about how America is torturing 3-year-olds, kidnapping them and torturing them, and we all watch it on American television, and you say, that's not true. And I say, oh, you're just defending
Michael,
your country.
Michael, that's sensationalism. Let me tell you, history is a funny thing, okay? Because I can look in a German history book or an American history book or an Arab history book, and I find different things. I mean, if we want to compare Thanksgiving, as an example.
Hang on. Are you saying I don't have facts in front of me and I'm just defending my race?
No, I think what you do is you rely on the facts that suit your agenda, which is to affect change. But I think
how do you know that? How many decades have you devoted to studying this in the original Arabic sources and Hebrew sources?
I have not devoted decades, and I'm not a scholar.
All right. You made a very sweeping claim. And that's why I'm pressing you. You made a sweeping claim, which to me smacks of racism and bigotry. So I've studied this quite intensely. I have studied this quite intensely for a long period of time. And I can give you primary source after primary source from Arab sources that vindicate exactly what I'm saying. You have not, and yet you make a judgment, sir. You make a judgment about how I come. You make a judgment about how I come to these conclusions.
Michael,
that strikes me as very unscientific and even dangerous.
No, Michael, I want you to explain to me what your theory is on how the Palestinians left Palestine. How many years you spent studying something.
It's not a theory.
Makes sense.
It's not a theory. There are roughly 600,000.
What happens when people move?
Will, it's not a theory. Will, are you? You know, it's really hard to learn, Will, when you ask a question and don't wait for the answer. It's not a theory. There was a war. The reason there was a war was because the surrounding Arab nations refused to recognize the Jewish state as constituted by the UN. There was a war because of which Jews were fighting Arabs. Arabs were fighting Jews. Some fled because of that. The great majority fled because they were urged to do so by the Arabs attacking, and they did not want to be in the middle of a war. So they fled, and they were never repatriated. Read the book that I've been quoting from, Samuel Katz, Battleground, okay? Take the time, just take the time, Will, to read one book. One book. All right? Just to get you started. Samuel Katz, Battleground. After you read it carefully, call me again. I think your tone will be different if you're open. We'll be back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, something of real interest is when someone listens to the broadcast, then calls in and misquotes what you said on the broadcast, not in a nasty way, but misquotes and misunderstands what I actually said earlier in the broadcast. You have to wonder how carefully that person is listening. And look, maybe I have a problem with facts in that I'm into facts. Maybe I have a fact fetish, that I like facts, that I like information. You know, when I was doing my doctoral studies, which were not in modern state of Israel, modern Jewish history, but everything was text-based, text. There was not a lot of speculation because we're just studying manuscripts, we're studying ancient documents, and we're doing our best to translate, understand them. Then you can discuss what they mean and their editing process and all this, but that's just something about me that I like primary sources. I like to read things firsthand as much as possible. And no, I haven't devoted decades to studying all the original Arabic sources about the formation of the modern state of Israel. Of course, I had 3 years of Arabic. And of course, I'm quite conversant with Middle Eastern issues. And I, as I've studied and looked at things carefully, I see a massive lie being perpetrated on the world about the Palestinian crisis. I'll say it again. It does not diminish the need for justice in the Middle East. Does not diminish the need for a compassionate look on their situation. But when you have one side saying we recognize your right to have a state here, Netanyahu, before Congress, to the Palestinians, and when both the Palestinian Authority and Hamas even more vehemently refused to recognize Israel's right to exist, and Hamas's charter wants to exterminate Israel, and Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, was a disciple of Yasser Arafat, was an arch-terrorist, wrote his doctoral dissertation on Holocaust denial. These are the peace partners. These are the peace partners. It is not an equal situation, friends. Tell you what, those that want to hear more about the whole refugee issue, I'm going to keep bringing some important quotes from primary sources to you in the next hour. So you can catch it online. You can listen live online or when you have an opportunity later on. Just go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. But I want to try to get to a few more calls if possible. Ron in Toronto, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thanks again for taking my call, Dr. Brown.
You bet.
I've just finished reading Our Hands Are Stained with Blood for about the fourth time. It's one of the most terrific reads I have read.
Well, thank you.
And
sir,
I would just suggest to your callers that they get this book because it had such an effect on my life, my spiritual life, and give it to their pastors because they need to read it. But getting back to the question that I have, it goes back to the Holocaust. And here on page 63 of Lies, Lies, Lies in your book, you write, this is back in 91, "Here are more lies, some even more grotesque, that you are likely to hear. The Holocaust never happened. It is merely a Zionist fabrication designed to influence world opinion." And then you go on to page 64 and say there was this traditional Catholic church in Quebec, this bishop of the traditional Catholic church, and he said the Holocaust is 6 million is a wild exaggeration. And here we are in 2011, Dr. Brown, and I got a guy in our Bible study, and he thinks exactly that, that the numbers are wildly exaggerated. And I've got another person in the church that I go to, and he thinks that the whole thing is just totally made up.
In your church and Bible study?
Yeah. They first of all, the one person in the Bible study thinks that, yeah, it happened, but the figures are wildly exaggerated.
Unbelievable.
Wildly exaggerated. And then I have somebody in the church I go to, and he just said, look, I'm sorry, but it's all made up. It's all made up. You guys, you've made up the whole thing. And
that's,
I just said,
scary.
I said, what? I said, look, it. If you go back into history, God loved the German people, but we know from past, present, that they have always been excellent record keepers.
Yeah, and let me just say this. When I was in Berlin, I went to the Jewish Museum there, and it's striking to when you can actually go, and of course there are other places in Germany you can go, but you actually have the names of all the records, the meticulous documents of all the Jews and the numbers. We know through careful, meticulous documentation, scholars like Raoul Hilberg and so many others have documented it city by city, village by village, that two-thirds of European Jews were wiped out, 6 out of 9 million, 3 out of 3.3 million Polish Jews, 90%. Wiped out. You can talk to Holocaust survivor after Holocaust survivor, some of whom are still alive today, whose mothers and fathers and grandparents and brothers and sisters were slaughtered. I mean, if there's anything documented and with footage and with everything else necessary, the denial of that is the ultimate example of anti-Semitic lies. It is utterly irrational.
Let me just say one more thing, Dr. Brown, if I could.
Yeah.
But people seem to forget about the Holocaust and forget about the whole idea was that this was a business. This was a business. The high command had to justify their costs per concentration camp to Berlin, even cans of Zyklon B, which of course was a gassing agent for the showers, it had to be costed out, and everything had to be done meticulously.
Yeah,
the
documentation is there. Hey, Ron, I've got to go, but thank you, sir, for the kind words and the encouragement for folks to get our hands stained with blood. Take Ron's word. He read the book 4 times. How many books have you read 4 times? I was deeply moved to write this book. It has impacted people around the world. I say that without shame because I know the Lord helped me to do it. And you can sort through the information in it and work it out on your own. Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People. It'll be eye-opening, painful, and yet inspiring when you're through. I've had rabbis tell this helped build relationship between Rabbi Shmuley and myself when he read that book, actually. Call or order, $15, postage paid. Get multiple copies. There are congregations where it is required reading for new members. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 to order. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Place your order today. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. And by the way, when I took issue with Will from Olney, Maryland, and said his comments sounded racist and bigoted, when I'm looking at facts and information in history, and he's telling me I'm stepping beyond facts so as to defend my own people, that's a problem. That's what I take issue with. All right, hang on. I want to get to more calls on the other side of the break. My bottom line for everyone leaving me now, there is a real devil who hates the Jewish people and wants to destroy them. And he spreads lies about the Jews that persist to this day. The good news, though, is that God has promised he will keep his people. And in the end, Israel will be saved. You know, old lies die hard. Today, we're going to take a good, hard look at some of the historic lies told about the Jewish people. They are alive and well today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Thursday. That means Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That means we focus on Israel, the Jewish people. Sometimes we answer the rabbis. Sometimes we look at messianic prophecies. Sometimes we look at the Middle East. Sometimes we answer questions about Jewish customs, practices. So the phone lines are open. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you've got any Jewish-related question you want to ask me, or if you take issue with any of my positions on Israel, phone lines open, 866-34-TRUTH. I do have a request, though. I have a request. If you ask me a question, allow me to answer. How's that? Fair enough? And online, AskDrBrown.org, you can click on the line of fire. I'm going to go to the calls, to the phones, fairly quickly today. But I want to tell you about one of the most common lies that has been told through Jewish history and still remains today. It is called the blood libel, the charge of ritual murder. Basically, that a group of Jews kidnaps a Christian child. It could change. It could be a child of any faith, but it's historically been a Christian child as this was passed on through the, quote, Christian world. And it's widely believed in the Muslim world to this day. A group of Jews kidnap a Christian child, often before Easter, torture him, kill him, often by crucifixion, and more times than not, drink the blood. The Nazis portrayed this in their cartoons. It remains portrayed in the Muslim world today. I've seen some of the skits and looked at some of the cartoons in the Muslim world depicting this. The remaining blood is also put to good use. The Jews use it for making Passover matzah, unleavened bread. April 26, 1343, a ritual murder accusation is raised against the Jews of Gemersheim, Germany. Thereupon, the town's whole Jewish community is burned at the stake. This lie, as I document in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the tragic story of the church and the Jewish people, this lie has made its way across the world. You have it among Greeks and Romans in a non-Christian early form. A ballad inspired by this Jewish blood libel was recently found in a book of folk songs in the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas. I wrote that 20 years ago. While a booklet published in Birmingham, Alabama in 1962 gave credence to the charge of Jewish ritual murder. According to church historian James Parks, in Central Eastern Europe, among both Roman Catholics and Eastern Orthodox Christians, there are almost more examples of the accusation of ritual murder between 1880 and 1945 than in the whole of the Middle Ages. Blood libel was used by the Nazis. The entire May 1st, 1934 issue of the Nazi newspaper Der Stürmer was devoted to Jewish ritual murder, and the regular weekly edition of the paper routinely carried illustrations of rabbis sucking the blood of German children. If you've never seen these cartoon illustrations, they're shocking. What's more shocking is they're still current in the Muslim world today. In the 1960s and the 1970s, the blood libel was spread by the leading financial figure in the Arab world, the late King Faisal of Saudi Arabia. On a number of occasions, Faisal informed newspaper interviewers that the Jews annually celebrated Passover by murdering a non-Jew and consuming his blood. Mustafa Tlas, who was the defense minister and deputy prime minister of Syria, wrote a book entitled The Matzah of Zion, reviving a tale concerning Jews in Damascus in 1840 who are said to have killed two Christians to use their blood to make matzah. The book has been translated into German, was adopted for Kuwaiti television. I tell you again, many Arab Muslim leaders sitting in the UN believe these lies to this day. Oh yeah, they need Jesus too. Just telling you, these are lies. We'll be back.
Flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before we go to your Jewish-related calls, this from the Jerusalem Post today. If Abbas embraces Hamas, speaking of Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian Authority, if Abbas embraces Hamas, he is walking away from peace. That's what Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel said. The article states, Israel slammed the Palestinian deal, paving the way for Hamas to join the PLO on Thursday, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman Mark Regev saying that if Palestinian Authority's President Mahmoud Abbas embraces Hamas, if he walks towards Hamas, he is walking away from peace. Leaders of several Palestinian groups, including Hamas and Fatah, agreed Thursday to activate and reconstruct the PLO, which was founded by Yasser Arafat, so as to allow other non-member parties to join the organization. Regev said that anyone who had illusions about Hamas's true character should have listened to the speeches last week in Gaza from Hamas's leader at an event marking the 25th anniversary of the founding organization. What we heard was a stream of hateful extremist rhetoric, he said. 866-34-TRUTH online, askdrbrown.org. Edith in Washington, D.C., thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, good afternoon. I just want to make two comments, three. First of all, I would like to say that there is information conveying the fact that being Jewish doesn't necessarily imply genetics or blood ethnicity, but it has to do with a matter of faith and spiritual culture rather than genetics. So it's not blood.
Someone can convert to Judaism, but the vast majority of Jews living today are ethnically Jewish. But yes, someone can convert to Judaism and then becomes part of the Jewish people. Correct.
Right. Now, there's a book called The 13th Tribe. I think the author is Basil Davidson, but I'm not sure.
No, it's Arthur Kessler. That's where he argues about the Khazars, but it's really a fringe book. It's been refuted by many other historians, but it's Arthur Kessler who tried to argue that many Jews today, or the primarily Ashkenazi European Jews, were descended from the Khazars, but it's very, very poor scholarship, and it has been thoroughly debunked for many years now.
Well, from what I understand, the only group of people that you could really think about in terms of blood ethnicity would be the Ethiopian group that was brought in from Ethiopia that actually are blood relatives that you can't actually trace by blood ethnicity.
And how do you trace their blood ethnicity?
Well, then how do you trace anybody else's blood ethnicity?
Through DNA tests. There are Jews who recognize that the Ethiopian Jews may be legitimately historically Jews. In any case, they identify as Jews, and that's why at great personal risk and danger, they have been brought back into Israel as much as possible. But in point of fact, you can trace the descendants of Aaron. You can go all the way back for thousands of years, and there is common DNA among the Kohanim. So in point of fact, DNA tests do verify the ethnic origins of Jewish people, and in particular, priestly caste. There is even a movement to try to find descendants of David based on DNA. So it can be done, actually, Edith. It can be done.
Well, I have to. Maybe it can be done, but I think that we need to take a look at this some more. And I do think that most of the people are people who have converted into the Jewish religion, and they can be anybody, atheist or anybody, just anybody who wants to, as long as they don't believe in Jesus Christ.
No. That's absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true. If it's traditionally, in order to convert to Judaism, you had to fully embrace the Jewish commandments, the Torah, and the God of Israel. So, Edith, tell you what, keep studying history and get the book we're offering this week, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, actually offering today and tomorrow. Make sure you call in and get that. You'll find it really eye-opening Hope you have a blessed holiday season, whatever holiday unto the Lord you are celebrating. Let's go to Don in Fresno, California. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, doctor. How you doing today?
Doing great, man. Thank you. How about you?
Kind of sick, but I'll get over it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You sound a little run down now that you mention it, but glad you're able to talk on the phone.
Thank you. Had you heard that in Kyoto, Japan, they had discovered a tribe?
Yeah, there are rabbis who go around the world looking for lost sheep of the House of Israel, scattered communities in China, scattered communities in India, scattered communities in the Sahara Desert, looking all around the world, trying to find these people. There are some groups that exist, and they circumcise their boys on the eighth day, or they observe the seventh-day Sabbath, but they don't even know why. And the rabbis will meet with them to try to see how far things go back. I haven't focused at all on what you're mentioning in Kyoto, Japan. So
yeah, these are rabbi geneticists.
It could well be. I just haven't followed that specific thing. But they're actually in Israel and in Jerusalem. You'll find even enclaves of these various groups that look far more Chinese or Indian than Israeli.
Yeah. Well, I have a question for you, and tell me if I'm wrong in this question. Do you deny that there is a well-financed, ungodly, I will say ungodly for an adjective, Zionistic movement going on today? Or is that just, are you saying that's all a fallacy?
Oh, there's certainly a strong Zionist movement, and some of it's well-financed, but I don't know what part of it would be ungodly.
Well, let's take the Supreme Court in Israel. That's fashioned and designed by a well-known group of people,
Who's that?
That would be the Rothschild family.
Oh, so the Supreme Court, you're sure about this? You're sure this is not a myth?
Well, from what I've understood, yeah. They financed, they designed and built in a Masonic architecture the Supreme Court of Israel, yeah.
Oh, the physical Supreme Court building. Do you find that same Mason conspiracy throughout America, Washington, D.C., and with, say, things in Central Park?
Don't take me there, because I've done the research on that. Okay?
I'm asking you a question, Don. I've had other callers and people write to me through the years that talk about same Mason. Don, I'm trying to talk to you, buddy, all right? I've had other people talk about the alleged Masonic conspiracy throughout America. I'm asking if you're one of those people.
I'm not sure what that question is.
Believe that many of our monuments throughout America were designed by Masons with specific...
I know the Zionists exist, and they're ungodly, and I know they exist, and that they have an agenda.
All right, great. Well, then, Don, thanks for weighing in. Obviously, you don't need my opinion because you got all the facts and the information. I do hope you feel better. There you go. We got it now. We have the information. That's when a question is not a question. So just so you know it, there is a Zionistic, Masonic, well-financed, ungodly conspiracy working throughout America and Israel, probably trying to take over the entire world. Thanks to Don from Fresno for sharing that with us. That's why I said at the beginning of the broadcast, if you ask me a question, please allow me to answer. No, I don't agree with what our friend Don said. Anita in Forest Hills, New York, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, just wanted to tell you that my father was a Cohen, so I'm a Boss Cohen, and he carried the genetic marker for the Cohenim going back to Aaron. And I just wanted to know if you... study the oral law as given to Moses through reading the Mishnah in Aramaic and the Gemara?
Of course. Yeah. In fact, let me clarify some of these terms for our listeners who may not be familiar with this. Okay, Anita?
Mm-hmm.
So first I'll just give a little lesson and we'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break. Traditional Jews believe that when God gave the Torah to Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave him the written Torah that we all agree on, the five books of Moses that we have in our Bibles. And he also gave them an oral Torah, which was instructions of how to keep the Torah. For example, when it says don't work on Sabbath, what that actually means, and further instructions as to how to interpret the laws and commandments, and that those were passed on through the generations.
Also
and then
codes
finally,
there.
Excuse me?
Codes, Bible codes.
No, Bible codes, that's an entirely separate issue. You're talking about systems of interpretation, not Bible codes. But traditional Jews believe that those were passed on through the generations and then ultimately written in Hebrew. The Mishnah is in Hebrew in the 2nd, 3rd century of this era, and then the 5th, 6th century in the Babylonian and Palestinian Talmuds, or Talmud of the Land of Israel, primarily in Aramaic. Have I studied? Sure.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it's a funny thing. In my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, I have one chapter called Bad Reporting, Bias, and Bigotry, and another chapter called Lies, Lies, Lies. And one of the lies, the Jews are secretly working with the communists or with the fascists, or with the socialists, whomever we don't like at the moment. Oh, and also with the Masons. The Hamas charter claims that Jews control the Masons too. 866-34-TRUTH. It's Thursday, which means Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Those of you that don't know me, I am a Jewish follower of Jesus for the last 40 years. And one day a week on our Line of Fire broadcast, we focus on issues relating to Israel and the Jewish people. And today we are dealing with some of the historic lies told about Israel and the Jewish people. And I'm going to get back to one of the big lies of this generation, namely that Israel is primarily responsible for the refugee problem in the Middle East. I would say those who are primarily responsible are the surrounding Arab nations. But before we get to some very telling quotes about that. Anita in Forest Hills, back to you. Yeah, I've studied Mishnah, Talmud, Midrash, the law code, Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Torah, those kinds of things, the Mefarshim, the Jewish interpreters for
and
many
what about
years.
The 13 principles by Maimonides.
Yeah, well,
that God has no form, and God is absolutely has no form whatsoever, no physical matter. It's one of the most important tenets of Judaism, those 13 principles. How can you call yourself a Jew and then believe that that there's a Son of God who has a physical form out of the flesh? It totally flies in the face of Judaism. You can't be both. It's like saying you're a vegetarian who eats meat once in a while.
Anita, I appreciate the point.
Background. It's really not doing a...
All right. For some reason, you're cutting out.
Come
I'm not
back
sure.
Before Mashiach comes.
Yeah, so Anita, can I answer your question?
Go ahead.
Okay, do you believe the Torah?
Of course.
Okay, in Numbers, the 12th chapter, it says that Moses saw the Tmunah, the form of the Lord. So it says that
Can you read the whole, give me the Parsha, and I'll look it up in my Hebrew Bible. No, I'm not going to look it up in English King James Version.
What?
I want the whole, quote me the whole thing in Hebrew, because
okay.
I understand Hebrew.
All right, perfect. It is found in Numbers chapter 12. And let me read it to you directly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, first, I don't worship any form. God can appear any way he wants to, manifest himself however he wants to. But let me read this to you. For the sake of our English listeners, I'm first going to...
I have my Chumash right here, so...
Okay, so Bamidbar,
okay.
Chapter 12, okay?
Chapter 12, okay.
All right. And then it says in Pasuk 8, verse 8, which I'll read in Hebrew here. Pe'al pe' adaber bo mar'eh velo v'chidot utmunat Adonai yabit. And he sees the form of the Lord.
That's vision, that's not form.
No. The word Temunah is the word used in Deuteronomy,
no,
the fourth
chapter.
No, in
modern Hebrew, Temunah is a vision.
Forget modern Hebrew. It's not modern Hebrew. This is Hebrew.
But I mean,
the
even
Tanakh.
That comes from modern Hebrew comes from the Bible.
Okay. In Deuteronomy, the fourth chapter, where it says that when God appeared on Sinai, you saw no form. That's the word used, Temunah. That's the word that's used. So Maimonides was wrong. God often appeared in a form to the children of Israel. Many times. Here, let's take take another look. Let's go to Shemot, okay? Exodus. Let's go to chapter 24, all right? Chapter 24, and let's look at this. Start reading in verse 9. So Shemot, Exodus.
Let me get it. I'm up.
Okay, chapter 24.
I can't move my fingers that quickly. 24, what line?
Yeah, starting in verse 9. All right. Vayal Moshe v'Aharon Nadav Avihu v'Shivim Mizikne Yisrael v'Kru'u v'Yir'u et Elohei Yisrael. And they saw the God of Israel. Verse 10. V'Yir'u et Elohei Yisrael.
What? One more time. What line is it?
It is verse 10. Beginning of verse 9, if you like. Vayal Moshe v'Aharon and Moses and Aaron Nadav Avihu v'Shivim Mizikne Yisrael. They went up on Mount Sinai. V'Yir'u at Elohei Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. V'tachat raglav k'maseh livnata sapir. Then it goes into further description here. Under his feet was something like a sapphire stone paved as clear as the sky. So it says that they saw the God of Israel. So God often appeared in a form. The idea that he's completely incorporeal is a later philosophic.
Yes, well, through our five senses, of course, there's some kind of a vision. There's some kind of a vision. There's some kind of a revelation, yes, of course, because when the 600,000 witnesses received the Ten Commandments altogether, 600,000 souls, Jewish souls, mm-hmm. received the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. There was a sound and light show. Of course, they see flashes of lightning, fire, smoke.
No, but that's
thunder.
Not what's written there. They, it says in the 24th chapter. This is later. They saw the God of Israel. I can give you many passages in the Tanakh where people saw God. That's not the issue. Of course, he has a form. He just did not reveal himself in a form on Mount Sinai because he didn't want
people
to make idols.
We're not talking about physical flesh. We're not talking about flesh.
He appeared in the flesh to Abraham
in
Genesis.
You're talking about sight, but you're not talking about something.
Physical flesh in Genesis 18. He appeared to Abraham. Hashem appeared to Abraham in physical flesh in Bereshit chapter 18. Very clear.
It says flesh.
Physical flesh, and Abraham fed them and washed their feet. Physical flesh, Yahweh.
Those were
Hashem.
The Malachim. Those
no,
were the three angels.
It is the Lord and two
those
angels.
Those were the angels
that's
coming down from Shemayim. They were Shlichim. They were.
No, see, that's my difference with you. I follow Torah, and you follow the words of men. That's the difference. In other words, I'm quoting Scripture to you. You're challenging me that I'm not a legitimate Jew. I'm quoting scripture to you, and I believe what's written in Scripture, Anita, whereas you don't believe it because you believe
I do
what
believe
people
it,
say.
But you can't just read the printed version. You have to have somebody explain it.
Ah, so
it and
I believe what's
it.
Written, and you believe the traditions
of
people.
Well, that's why there's an oral Torah.
But there is no such thing. It's a myth.
It explains the written Torah, and you
it's
don't accept the oral Torah.
Anita,
the oral
if you'll
Torah was whispered to Moshe. And
I'll tell you what. Are you willing to read a whole book I wrote on oral Torah? If so, I'll send it to you free. Are you willing to?
Yeah. Go ahead. Send it to me free.
All right. Tell you what. Anita, I love conversations like this. I'm out of time. I got a break. Stay on the line. Andrew's going to get your address. We will send you the book, and then we will destroy your address. We won't put it in the database or anything, okay? And I'll send you the book I wrote about oral Torah. Did God give an oral law to Moses on Mount Sinai? But thanks for the dialogue, Anita. It's very important, and I appreciate the call. And thank you for being a true Jew and speaking your mind as I did to you. All right, Andrew's going to get your address. Friends, if you don't have Our Hands Are Stained with Blood dealing with some of the great historic lies about Israel and the Jewish people and anti-Semitism in church history, call us at 1-800-278-9978. And Anita's gone before we can get her address. What do you know?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, I am having an unexpected blast today on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday, getting some of the most contentious calls I've gotten in memory. Wonderful. All in one day, the last being from an Orthodox Jewish woman in New York. We got to look at the Hebrew text together, and she explained to me you can't just look at what it says. Someone has to explain it too, which is obviously a fundamental difference we have. With that, I welcome you to this Thursday broadcast on the Line of Fire. I am focusing today on some of the historic lies told about Israel and the Jewish people, and want to spend a few minutes talking about the modern refugee problem and asking the question, what caused it? How did it come to pass? If you don't have my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, I want to urge every one of you listening to get a copy today. Now, I'm not giving it away. We don't get it for free ourselves, but it is worth every penny and more. Call to order, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the most translated book of any book I've ever written, more relevant today than when it came out in 1992. Church history in there will blow your mind. Finding out some of the historic lies and seeing how current and relevant they are. Understanding the era of replacement theology, the idea that the church has replaced Israel and God's promises. And understanding the demonic nature of anti-Semitism and God's eternal purposes for Israel. The book will open your eyes. So I'll just tell you right now how you can get it. $15 postage paid, so reduced price, postage paid. No, it won't arrive in time for Christmas, but get them by the boatload for yourself and friends. 1-800-278-9978 to order. I never mention our resource offer at the beginning of the broadcast, but I'm doing it today because of its relevance. 1-800-278-9978. Order the book. Order several. If you'd like them signed, just let us know. To get on the program to ask me your Jewish-related questions, to take issue. Oh, this is the day to take issue with me. And if you've got a Zionistic Mason conspiracy, Masonic conspiracy, this is the day to call. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, why is there a refugee crisis in the Middle East today? In short, it is because the surrounding Arab nations and those Arabs living within Israel, by and large, did not accept the establishment of the Jewish state. They did not welcome in the refugees fleeing after the Holocaust, and only a limited number were able to flee there before the Holocaust. And when the war broke out, they were encouraged to leave. They were encouraged to leave by Arab leaders. And then when roughly 800,000 Jews had to flee from Arab Muslim lands because of the war, leaving their wealth behind and their possessions behind, whatever else they had, their houses, lands, those that had it, leaving that behind, they were assimilated by the modern struggling state of Israel. The surrounding Arab nations, making up roughly 350 times the territory of Israel, by and large, did not assimilate the Palestinians, leading to a refugee crisis that has been used against Israel to this day. It does not mean everything modern Israel does is right. It does not mean there are not issues that the Palestinians have. It means that the cause of the crisis was not the Jewish people, nearly, fractionally, as much as the surrounding Arab nations. Exhortations like this came from local Arab leaders. I'm reading from Samuel Katz's book, Battleground, but I deal with this also in Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. Monsignor George Hakim, then Greek Catholic Bishop of Galilee, the leading Christian personality in Palestine for many years, told the Beirut newspaper in the summer of 48, before the flight of Arabs had ended, the refugees were confident that their absence would not last long and that they would return within a week or two. Their leaders had promised them that the Arab armies would crush the Zionist gangs very quickly and that there was no need for panic or fear of a long exile. You have mayors of Jewish cities saying, please stay, to the Arab neighbors. Didn't happen. Didn't happen. More to come. Stay with us. Came to the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, here's some interesting data, some interesting primary quotes and sources regarding the modern refugee problem in the Middle East. 866-34-TRUTH. The London Weekly Economist reported on October 2nd, 1948, of the 62,000 Arabs who formerly lived in Haifa, not more than 5 or 6,000 remained. Various factors influenced their decision to seek safety in flight. There is but little doubt that the most potent of the factors were the announcements made over the air by the higher Arab executive urging the Arabs to quit, meaning to flee. It was clearly intimated that those Arabs who remained in Haifa and accepted Jewish protection would be regarded as renegades. And the nearest Arabic broadcasting station from Cyprus stated on April 3, 1948, it must not be forgotten that the Arab Higher Commission encouraged the refugees' flight from their homes in Jaffa, Haifa, and Jerusalem. Samuel Katz writes in his book Battleground, even in retrospect, in an effort to describe the deliberateness of the flight, the leading Arab propagandist of the day, Edward Atiyah, then secretary of the Arab League office in London, so an opponent of modern Israel, reaffirmed the facts. This wholesale exodus was due partly to the belief of the Arabs, encouraged by the boasting of an unrealistic Arab press and the irresponsible utterances of some of the Arab leaders that it could be only a matter of some weeks before the Jews were defeated by the armies of the Arab states and the Palestinian Arabs enabled to re-enter and retake possession of their country. Kenneth Bilby, one of the American correspondents who covered Palestine for several years before and during the War of 1948, soon afterward wrote a book of his experience on his experience and observations. In it, he reported the Arab exodus, initially at least, was encouraged by many Arab leaders such as Haj Amin al-Husseini, the exiled pro-Nazi Mufti of Jerusalem, and by the Arab Higher Committee for Palestine. They viewed the first wave of Arab setbacks as merely transitory. Let the Palestine Arabs flee into neighboring countries. It would serve to arouse the other Arab peoples to greater effort. And when the Arab invasion struck, the Palestinians could return to their homes and be compensated with the property of Jews driven into the sea. The war was not yet over when Emil Houri, secretary of the Arab Higher Committee, the official leadership of the Palestinian Arabs, stated in an interview with a Beirut newspaper, "I do not want to impugn anyone, but only to help the refugees. The fact that there are these refugees is the direct consequence of the action of the Arab states in opposing partition in the Jewish state. The Arab states agreed upon this policy unanimously, and they must share in the solution of the problem." In retrospect, the Jordanian newspaper Palestine wrote on February 19, 1949, "The Arab states encouraged the Palestine Arabs to leave their homes temporarily in order to be out of the way of the Arab invasion armies." And on and on and on. As late as 1952, the charge had the official stamp of the Arab Higher Committee. In a memorandum to the Arab League states, the committee wrote, "Some of the Arab leaders and their ministers in Arab capitals declared that they welcomed the immigration of Palestinian Arabs into the Arab countries until they saved Palestine. Many of the Palestinian Arabs were misled by their declarations. It was natural for those Palestinian Arabs who felt impelled to leave their country to take refuge in Arab lands and to stay in such adjacent places in order to maintain contact with their country so that to return to it would be easy when, according to the promises of many of those responsible in the Arab countries, promises which were given wastefully, the time was ripe. Many were of the opinion that such an opportunity would come in the hours between sunset and sunrise. Most pointed of all was the comment of one of the refugees, 'The Arab governments told us to get out so that we can get in.' So we got out, but they did not get in." And again, this much we know. This much we know. After fleeing, after leaving, for whatever reason they left, let's say that you don't believe all those quotes from primary sources that I gave you. Let's say you don't believe any of those quotes. Why didn't the surrounding Arab lands then absorb these Arabs who'd been living in Palestine? Why didn't they absorb them? 800,000 Jews had to flee from their homelands. In some places, they had lived for 2,500 years, and they had to flee when war on Israel was declared in 1947, 1948. 800,000. They're assimilated into the modern state of Israel, the vast, vast, vast majority of them. That's where they ended up after fleeing for their lives. And again, they had been in some of their countries for 2,500 years. Why didn't the surrounding Arab nations, again, with a total of 350 times the land compared to the Jewish people in Israel, why didn't they assimilate them? Why aren't they assimilating them today? Because this remains an indictment against Israel. This makes Israel the guilty party. 866-34-TRUTH. Scott in Richmond, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thanks, Dr. Brown. A real quick question. I was listening to a teaching, and the man, what he was trying to explain was how the Samaritan woman, the woman at the well, when after she had talked to Yeshua, she ran back into town and told everyone that the Messiah they had been waiting for was coming. And what he was saying was how she could be a Gentile but still be expecting the same Messiah. And he quoted a verse, and I wrote it down for the life of me. I can't remember where I put it. But I think it was in 2 Kings, and I looked it up in the NIV, and it said that Israel came against Judah. But then I looked it up in my King James Version, and it said Israel came against the Jews. And my question is all of Israel considered Jews as in they practiced Judaism, and the only ones that are considered ethnic Jews are descendants of the tribe of Judah, or is that just totally a flawed concept?
Yeah, a flawed concept, but let me sharpen it for you, and it's easy to misunderstand these things. We have the 12 tribes of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In the days of Solomon's son, Rehoboam, so this is the grandson of David, there was a split because of Solomon's sin and then Rehoboam's hardness of heart. There was a split. The two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, became the kingdom of Judah, and that's where the throne of David continued. The 10 northern tribes became the kingdom of Israel. Now, they're all Israelites. They're all supposed to be following the same Torah and worshiping the same God, but there was a lot of idolatry that went on. The 10 northern tribes were destroyed by the Assyrians in 722, 721 B.C. Many of them scattered and lost to history. Others remained where they were, and there was some intermarriage. That's where people claim the Samaritans come from. The Samaritans say, no, they're the legitimate true descendants. And then many of them fled south and became incorporated in the southern tribes. After the Babylonian exile, when the kingdom of Judah went into exile in Babylon, many of the Jews did, or the Judeans, when they came back under the Persians, this was called the province of Yahud, so the Jewish province, and from there we get the basic stream that flows after that, which is that all those of Israel that can be identified historically became part of Judah and hence are known as Jews. So the majority of Jews today would trace their lineage, if they could, to the tribe of Judah, but Jews today represent all 12 of the tribes. James, Jacob, chapter 1, writing to Jewish believers, writes to the 12 tribes. Paul makes reference to the 12 tribes in Acts. So all of the 12 tribes of Israel are represented today among the Jewish people, but the largest single identifiable group would be descendants of the tribe of Judah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the good question, Scott. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let me try to grab one more quick question. Michael in St. Petersburg, Florida, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, good afternoon. Quick question. Just, I have a Jewish client, and we were talking about what actually makes a person a Jew. Is it, and I commented about the, you know, the lineage and referring to the father's side, and he referred to a person as, no, that they're not really a Jew unless their mother was a Jew. And that's a little confusing to me, particularly after reading the New Testament when it's given, you know, the whole lineage, you know, of Christ as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's put the lineage of the Messiah aside just for a moment as a separate issue, but traditional Jews would say that you're Jewish if your mother is Jewish. But you can make an excellent biblical case that lineage would have come through the father. The reason I say that is there's no dispute, say, that the children of Solomon were legitimately Israelites and, in a later sense, Jews, even though Solomon had all of these foreign wives. From what we can see, there was dispute about this in New Testament times, and that's why there's even the question about Timothy, who had a Jewish mother, whether he should be circumcised. Titus, because it is in a different class, he doesn't get circumcised. So it is an ancient debate, and traditional Judaism went one way on it. But you can actually debate the opposite from Scripture. And Reform Jews, more liberal Jews, are willing to say either the mother or the father if you're raised Jewish. Thanks for the call.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I quote Professor David Rausch in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People, our special resource offer today, the most translated of any book I've ever written. Professor David Rausch notes, on many occasions in 1948, the Arab High Command declared to the Palestinians, a cannon cannot differentiate between a Jew and an Arab. Leave the country for 2 weeks and you will come back victorious. Now, more than 60 years later, these nationless Palestinians are still waiting for Arab victory over the Jewish state. And remember, while you might hear testimony from Palestinian Christians, for whom I have the utmost sympathy, they do not represent the Palestinians as a whole, who are predominantly, say in Gaza, almost exclusively Muslim. And in what would be called the West Bank, the territories that are now led or overseen by Palestinian Authority, still you're talking like 90% Muslim. And remember, neither the Palestinian Authority nor Hamas, which rules Gaza, accepts the existence of the Jewish state in terms of saying, we affirm. So Michael in St. Petersburg, sorry I had a run right before the break there. Ultimately, I do not believe that you can prove based on Scripture that Jewishness is determined by descent through the mother. You could make an argument through the father. You could make an argument through the mother. Jewish argument would be, say, in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, when there was when the Jewish men married Gentile women, that they then had to divorce the women and the children because of the intermarrying. So why put the children away? But then an obvious answer would be that's just because kids are going to be with their mother. You're not going to have custodial rights. You know, it's not the ancient world. Kids are going to be with their mother. But that's a whole other story. How do I look at it? I look at it simply this, that if a person is raised by either a Jewish mother or a Jewish father and was raised with a consciousness that they were Jewish, that would be the biggest issue in terms of recognizing their Jewishness. But it is an ongoing debate, even in parts of the Jewish community, especially the more liberal reform parts. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, God willing, we're live tomorrow and Monday on the Line of Fire. I've got the time to do it. I love being on the air with you, and it gives an opportunity for some. Maybe your work schedules are different. You can call in. We're doing special editions, not just tomorrow, but Monday as well. If you've got questions, we've got answers here on the Line of Fire. Frank in Canton, Ohio, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
You know, this holiday season, I want to bring about, no man could fulfill the law. The law brought about sin and entered in sin and death by the law. So, you know, Abraham's seed was scattered amongst all the nations, all right? So the people that want to narrow in on who's the tribe of Judah and where they all are and who are the tribes, Paul said there is neither no more Jew nor Gentile.
Oh, wait, is that what he said?
Sure.
That's what he said. There's no more such thing as Jew or Gentile.
That is correct.
And he also said there's no such thing as man or woman, male or female, right?
That is correct. But
that's not what he said.
In the body
of
Christ.
In Christ, There is no male, female, Jew, Gentile, slave, free, meaning we have equal status, meaning there is no higher, lower, meaning that we each relate to God as children, as sons and daughters. But can I ask you a question?
Adopted.
Does Paul, Frank, does he give instructions to women and then instructions to men? Does he ever do that?
Of course he does.
But there's no male nor female. Why does he do that?
Because he tried. See, Jesus came
Does he give instructions to slaves and masters?
At that time, in that period,
there's no slave or free, you're saying?
That is
and there's
correct.
No male
That's
or
what
female.
Paul's gospel says.
So, no, but you're misunderstanding what he says. Paul wrote, read Romans, the 11th chapter. Paul writes to believers there, and he calls them Gentiles, and he talks about the importance of Gentile believers provoking Israel to envy because Israel remains something beloved by God. Paul says it explicitly, that they may be enemies now because of the gospel, but they are loved because of the patriarchs, because God's gifts and calling are irrevocable.
That is correct. And Paul also reminded us who he grafted out. He grafted out the Jews to graft into the Gentiles.
He cut off unbelieving Jews and grafted in believing Gentiles and told the Gentiles if they continued in faith, wonderful. If not, they would be cut off. And then he's ultimately said that Israel will be grafted back in because there remains a distinct people called Israel.
If they haven't received Christ, you know, Jesus said, "I am the branch; ye are the vine."
Of course,
they
have.
Me, I abide
they will
in
turn
you.
To. They and will if, turn to Frank. They will turn to Jesus. I've devoted much of my life to helping win Jewish people to Jesus.
Do they remain
a distinct entity, known by God, seen by God, and loved by God with a purpose? By God.
And he's still patiently waiting for them to receive Christ. Christ was the fulfillment of the law.
Right, but Frank, so what are you saying then? Then there is an importance to praying for Israel. There is an importance to recognizing God's plans for Israel. And there is an importance for Gentile believers to recognize their heritage and to try to provoke Jewish people to jealousy in Jesus.
Well, I'm not happy about the Arabs and the Arabian nation. You know
Yes or no? Yes, I'm almost out of time, sir. So
sure.
Yes or no? Is it important for Gentile believers to recognize their connection to Israel and to be trying to?
I'm not a Gentile believer. I'm a person in Christ Jesus today.
So Paul was wrong. So when he wrote to the Gentiles in Romans 11, that doesn't include you.
Frank,
tell you what. I'm going to send you a free copy of my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. All right, if you're willing, everyone's going to pay for it today, but I'm going to send you a free copy. Because I want you to study these issues. If you will receive it, Frank, get on the phone with Andrew. He's taking a couple of calls right now, so give him a second. Get on the phone with Andrew. He will get your name and address, and we will send you a free copy of the book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. If you promise to read it, I'll send it as a gift. Now, everybody else, I strongly encourage you to read this book. It will open your eyes. It will set your thinking right. I wrote it with many tears, with a deep burden from the Lord, and has gone around the world and continues to make an impact. Just $15 postage paid. Get a bunch of them and then sow into us to help us reach more Jewish people with the gospel. So there. Here's how you order. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time. To order, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. Get a bunch of them. $15 postage paid per copy. If you want me to sign them, just let us know. 1-800-278-9978. Frank, hang on. Andrew will get you in a moment. Get your address. We will joyfully send you the book. My bottom line, yes, it's absolutely true that in Jesus, Jew and Gentile are one. It's absolutely true that there's no caste system in the gospel. It's absolutely true that we were equally sons and daughters of God through Jesus. And it is equally true that God has a distinct purpose for Israel and the Jewish people. And that should matter to every follower of Jesus in the world, Jew and Gentile alike.